just going to say well done to all the people in the room that just sat through, what, 5, 6 songs? That's a weird experience if you don't normally come to church, so well done. All right, I'm just going to get myself sorted here. Are you impressed? It's a fast costume change, isn't it? I have to go pretty quick. And I just realised I have a broken button, so if that's really going to annoy you, I'm just citing it now that I'm fully aware of it. In the school holidays, my family and I had the immense privilege of going on holiday to Singapore and staying with some family friends of ours. And my kids were full of anticipation because we had promised them that we were going to take them to Universal Studios. Now, we've had the privilege of going to some theme parks in Australia with our children in the past, but this was a little bit different because my kids are a little bit older, and I would say they are fully in their roller coaster era. And so the day started with us having to line up at Universal Studios before the gates even opened. And we were ready to go the moment that the gate opened, and we like raced through the theme park in order to get to the scariest and the fastest loop-the-loop roller coasters and to ride them together before the lines got too long. And I wasn't sure if I was going to ride them or not, but my like cool mum brain kicked in, and so I like said, no, I'm absolutely going to jump on these rides. And so I did the first ride. If you've been to Universal in Singapore, Cylon, is that what it's called, Ted? Cylon, it's pretty scary. I actually don't think it's as scary as what's the steel taipan in Queensland? Is that what it's called? Yeah, I actually think that one is scarier, if you're taking notes. But so we did this roller coaster and it was fantastic, had a great time, but then the humidity of Singapore and my, you know, mum vertigo started to kick in, and I thought there is no way I could do any more roller coasters today. I've already maxed out. But the kids obviously wanted to keep going on roller coasters. And so three of the kids were very keen to go on a roller coaster called the Mummy Experience. And there was absolutely no way that I had it in me to do another roller coaster. And so we said, that's fine, we'll drop you off there together and you can ride the roller coaster together. And so we had a plan. It was a 70-minute wait line for that roller coaster. That was actually quite a short wait time. But my 12-year-old, who, as I've been teaching her Egyptian history this year, I've discovered does not enjoy mummies, really, or anything to do with Egyptian history. And so she was not that keen to have the full mummy experience. So she opted not to go on the roller coaster, and she instead came with us. Now, I felt sad for her because, oh, hang on. All right, I am on. Somebody will be able to keep up, I'm sure. So she came with us, and I was like, 70 minutes at Universal Studio, which she's been incredibly excited about, is a really long time to miss out and do nothing. And so we wandered through Minion World, that part of the park, which my roller coaster kids are no longer interested in. But Ruby, my 12-year-old, confidently said to me, I can do this roller coaster on my own. And so we said, okay, that's fine. So we settled on a meeting point where we were going to meet. We set timers in on our phones to say in half an hour we would be back here in this meeting point to meet you and pick her up. And off she went alone, no phone, no way of contacting her. Off she went alone into the roller coaster, and we waved her goodbye. What could go wrong? Seemed like a fine plan. We had timers set. Anyway, 30 minutes later, we returned to the meeting point, expecting, based on the ride wait times, that Ruby would be there waiting for us. But she was not there. 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. No Ruby. 40 minutes later, the kids who had been on the 70-minute ride came and found us. And still, Ruby, a single rider, might I add, should have like skipped the line, was still not there. And so I stood waiting, searching the crowd, looking backwards and forwards, scanning every face, trying to find her. Flip forward. There's a picture of beautiful Ruby in Minion World. If you get there. There she is. Scanning the crowd, trying to find her. And the friends that we were staying with, because their daughter, who did have technology, had messaged them and said, Ruby's lost, messaged us and said, you need to go to guest services and you need to report that you've got a missing child. And suddenly, I felt quite scared. It all started to feel very real. But I wasn't really angry at the situation. I wasn't certainly angry at Ruby. I wasn't thinking about how I could punish her or how I could make her pay. I didn't even wish that we had put more restrictions or boundaries around her. Actually, I didn't want rules in that moment. What I wanted was connection. I wanted relationship. I just wanted to find her. I just wanted to take her in my arms and reassure her that she had been reconnected and that she was okay. Now, the good news of this story is that Ruby was found. It's okay, she's in kids. And so what had happened is she'd been stuck on the ride and it had gone for far longer than they had advertised. And so she was stuck in this experience, separated from me, not able to find her way back to me, knowing that she was separated. And when she finally got out of the ride, she raced through the crowd of people, straight sprinting to my open arms, and we embraced each other. Now, you may be in this room today because you've been invited to a baptism. And as you listen to the music and as you watch the interactions between the people, you may be kind of trying to make sense of what it is that you've seen and heard this morning. Maybe before today, you've heard a story that religion is a cult, or that it's a rule book, or that it's a repressive lifestyle that is full of restrictions. But what Megan and Chris have experienced about the heart of God is actually entirely different. Because just like me waiting to be reunited with my daughter, God is a God that doesn't want to restrict us or to punish us or even to maintain control over us. Now, in the Gospel of John, one of the followers of Jesus who wrote an eyewitness account about all of the things that he saw Jesus do and say, he wrote, "For God so loved the world that he sent his Son, so that anyone who believes in him shall not perish, but have eternal life." See, the story of Jesus, the good news of the gospel, is that God is like the best parent ever. And he longs to find us. He longs to know us and to embrace us and to be in relationship with us. God longs to welcome us into his family now and forever. You know, in the Gospel of Luke, we hear this story. I'm going to paraphrase it for you this morning, but we have white Bibles all over the church. And so if you don't have a Bible, then that's our gift to you. Feel very free to take it home and look at the contents page at the front and you'll find the book of Luke. And this story comes from Luke 15 and you're very welcome to read this yourself. But there's this story about a bunch of religious people who are complaining about Jesus. And they're complaining about the way that he scandalously engaged with people who the community perceived as bad, like tax collectors and addicts and prostitutes and people that the Pharisees, these religious people, despised. And Jesus looked at these religious, rule-obsessed men and he told them a story about a lost son. And there was once a man who had two sons. And one day, the younger son came to his father and he said, "Dad, I am ready to live my own life. Give me my share of the inheritance now." Now, this is a shocking request because basically the son is saying, "I want what you can offer me, but I don't want to have any relationship with you. I don't want you." Now, the gracious father agreed because love is actually not love if it's forced. And so he divided what he had and he released his son to go and to live freely. And so the son, he packs up, he leaves home and he sets off for a far away country, chasing freedom and excitement and everything that he thought would make him happy. And for a while it worked. He felt like he was winning. He was surrounded by people who liked him and who liked what it was that he had to offer. And his friends remained until eventually his money ran out and he no longer had anything to offer to his friends. And then the story tells us that a famine hit the land and the son found himself broke and hungry and he found himself working for a farmer, feeding pigs on someone else's farm. So desperate that he looked at the food the pigs were eating and thought, maybe this is all there is left for me. He'd been given freedom to live his life however he wanted, but all the freedom in the world hadn't sustained or fulfilled him. And he found that he was lonely. He was disappointed. That he was empty. He found that he was lost. So one day, as he's sitting in the dirt among the pigs, he thought to himself, "What am I doing here? Even my father's workers are treated better than this. Maybe if I just go home and if I just repent and say I'm sorry, then my father will make me one of his servants." So he got up and he started walking home, rehearsing his apology the whole way. But even before he reached the house, his father, who was waiting for him, saw him coming from down the road. And instead of standing there with his arms crossed, instead of looking at him with aggression or disappointment, the father ran to him full of compassion and he wrapped his arms around his son and he kissed him. And the son tried to get the words out, "Dad, I've messed up. I don't deserve to be called your son." But the father quickly interrupted him and he said, "Quick," to the servants. He said, "Bring the best robe, the one that we keep for special occasions, and put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Let's throw a feast and celebrate. My son was lost, but now he's found. He was as good as dead, but now he is alive again," and the whole household erupted in joy. It's a beautiful story. Even more so when we consider the story through the cultural lens of a patriarchal and covenantal society. And two things stand out to me about this story. One is the experience of the son, and the other is the response of the father. You know, the son leaves, selfishly expecting every blessing, but completely uninterested in a relationship with the father. And graciously, the father, he lets him go. He doesn't hold him back or restrict him or force him into relationship. In fact, he blesses him. But after the son has been separated from the father, after he has spent his money, and after he has experienced complete freedom in an unboundaried world, he finds that everything that the world had to offer him comes up empty. The drinks run dry, the parties lose their luster, and he is overcome by a great sense of emptiness. Maybe you have experienced some of this discontent in a life that is aching for meaning. Because we chase after achievements and adventure and relationships and success, and still there's something that whispers to us, surely there's more to life than this. The author of the Chronicles of Narnia, C.S. Lewis, he says it like this: if I find in myself desires which nothing in this world can satisfy, the only logical explanation is that I was made for another world. I think Lewis captures what so many of us feel, a kind of homesickness for something that we can't name. And the gospel tells us what that longing is. It's that we were made to have a life with God. We were made to be in relationship with the Father. And only he can satisfy that ache. You know, there's a book of ancient Jewish poetry called Ecclesiastes, and it puts it like this: God has set eternity in the human heart. That longing within us, it isn't a flaw, it's a compass that's pointing us back toward home. But I'm equally captivated by the response of the father. Because after the son has proclaimed that essentially he wants the father dead, and he's content to take his inheritance and to live a life of separation, the father could easily say to him, I've given you your bit and we are done. I think maybe I would have. But that's not the response. In fact, Jesus notes that while the son is still far from home, the father who is watching and waiting, who has not given up on the son but is waiting with expectation for his return, scanning every face in the crowd, he sees his son coming and he hitches up his robes in a manner that is wildly undignified for an old Jewish patriarch, and he runs towards the son, throwing his arms around him and celebrating his return. The father responds like me finding my daughter. He is full of joy. That which was lost has now been found. And he doesn't lecture or punish the son. He doesn't say, where have you been and why has it taken you so long to find your way to me? He doesn't even ask for the money back. He celebrates. In fact, he so lavishly gives to the son, He reinstates him with the mark, the status of the family. He puts the family ring on his finger and he calls for a robe to cover over his dirty garments, to cover over any shame of the life that he has been living. And he calls everyone not to judge or criticize, but to party, because that which was lost has now been found. A story that Jesus told, this story, it's a metaphor for children who find their way to God. Like Chris said, he's the perfect father, better than any earthly father, even the best ones that we have. It's a metaphor for people who find the Father and who pursue relationship with God. In the book of Colossians, the Apostle Paul, he summarizes that experience like this. He says, at one time, you all had your backs turned to God. At one time, you all had your backs turned to God, thinking rebellious thoughts of him, giving him trouble every chance you got. But now, by giving himself completely at the cross, actually dying for you, Christ brought you over to God's side and put your lives together whole and holy in his presence. You don't walk away from a gift like that. And I've spent time talking to Megan and to Chris about their experience of coming home to the Father. And there are dozens of people in this room who have had the same experience, who have found hope and meaning and purpose by being united with the Father. And that's what baptism is about. It's our homecoming story. It's God saying, you are mine. I love you eternally. Come home. Because we've been created by a God, a Father who longs to love us and to know us. And living life apart from him, it just feels empty and unsatisfying and actually pretty lonely. And in the story of the lost son, it's not the son's brokenness or sin or his poor choices that Jesus focuses on. It's the deep anguish that comes from a life lived in separation from the one who loves us more than anyone else on earth. If you hear nothing else this morning, hear this. God is not a God of condemnation. He's a God of connection. And that's the good news of the gospel. That's the news that we celebrate as believers, that God so loved the world that he sent us Jesus to reconcile us, to restore us, and to reunite us to God. And so as we close the service this morning, I want to make an invitation to you. To every person in this room today, maybe you don't know what it means to have relationship with God. Maybe you don't know that you are wholly loved and accepted. And if you feel the ache inside you that there must be more to life than this, then I would love to extend the welcome to you to come and see. Just come and see. You know, Megan heard about Jesus through Alpha. And we have an Alpha party launching next week at 2 p.m. here. There's going to be great food. There's going to be live music. There's going to be great judgment-free conversations. And we would love you to come and experience the hospitality of Alpha. In fact, I would love to invite you right now to look to the screens for a little video.
In the modern world, there's not much space for life's big questions.
I don't know. Where am I going in the future?
Not much time set aside for, why am I here?
I think we weren't actually made for this life, we were made for a life beyond this.
Is there more to life than this?
Some people dream of finding happiness through money.
Shopping all the time.
Something awakened in me. It was a realization I would never find happiness where I was looking for it.
Where's God in all of this?
I believe humanity needs to believe in something.
Why do bad things happen?
What's the deepest human need?
Why create the world?
We all have different perspectives on the meaning of life.
I don't know.
I just do think that there is more to life.
Alpha is a place where you can be yourself, say what you think, and challenge everything. Each episode unpacks a new topic and gives you time to explore what you think. Try Alpha.
If you're someone who hasn't found belonging in our community, there is a little card on every single person's chair this morning. And if you don't belong to our community, then that card is an invitation for you today to come and join us. But if you are a part of our community, there's a card on your chair too. And that is an opportunity for you this week to consider who in your world might be like that lost son who is aching, searching for more. And longing to know the love of the Father who loves us eternally. Well, that's the end of the service. Congratulations, everybody. You've done it. Yes, you can clap.